is Out of Line After Hours with John McElroy, episode 10 for Thursday, June 4th, 2009. How's that working out for you? Watch Out of Line After Hours live at outoflinedetroit.tv every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time or 2300 hours Greenwich Mean Time. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Out of Line After Hours in the iTunes Music Store. Well, here we go for another edition of Out of Line After Hours. And first off, Peter, great having you here. And 10th here. Anniversary of AutoExtremist.com.
Yes, 499 issues.
And
500 next week.
Okay, and you brought in some M&Ms.
AutoExtremist labeled M&Ms with 10 years after on them.
10th anniversary. And so
we're doing Lee music.
Yeah.
And so are you doing anything special for the 10th anniversary?
No, we just did the issue. And frankly, I'm so burnt out. That's all I can do to just say thank you.
Right. But still, a milestone. Yep. Lasting a decade at anything is pretty good.
Thanks.
Especially in media these days.
Yeah, really, when you're, you know, your life expectancy is about 37 seconds.
Right. And Jason Vines, great having you back here in the studio, cool. As opposed to via the Skype last time.
Yeah, from Mackinac Island. And as I said when I came in the studio, I'm giving kudos to my my friend over here wearing his hat, Auto Extremist, and where I was 10 years ago at Nissan. So
the Auto Extremist hat to celebrate for Peter, and because he's 10 years ago you were at Nissan.
And Nissan was not in good shape.
No, that's right. Probably one of the reasons they went after you.
Well,
straighten their image out.
We'll see. And around the time 10 years ago is when Renault came in with Chuck Egone and turned the place around and had a hell of a run there.
The Gonster.
Gonster. That was one of your phrases. So I'm looking forward to a good show tonight with a great new guest.
Yeah, great new guest. Tom Walsh. Columnist with the Detroit Free Press. Been in the business a long time, and great to have you here with us.
Great to be here. I don't know if I can keep up with these guys.
Oh, yeah, you
that's
can.
Your problem. Oh, you got to put your mic on.
Oh, God, you're already screwing it up.
I am. Did it leaning over to get those M&Ms.
So, Tom, how long you been in this business?
Let's see. I was in college and 68 to 72, so from sophomore year on, pretty much.
And pretty much at the Free Press?
Free Press since 82.
Uh-huh.
Most of it as an editor, the last 7 years or so writing a column.
Right. How do you, and how often do you write your column?
That depends. I mean, Peter was just talking about being burned out. It's supposed to be a three-day-a-week gig, but sometimes it's three a day. Lately, because you write one for the web, and you write another one for the web, and you got to write a containable because we don't jump in the newspaper anymore, and then you got to write a real column. And
because they triple your pay when you do that.
Exactly.
I enjoyed your column today.
Well, thank you.
I delivered mail to DeLorean in the summer of '68.
Yeah, well, for the audience, tell who haven't seen your column.
What I did the day after GM's bankruptcy filing on Tuesday was. I went over to Whitechapel Cemetery in Troy to visit John DeLorean's grave.
Why?
Because I didn't know if...
He's sick.
Not DeLorean. Tom.
Tom.
Well, I didn't know if anybody would tell John the news. So I thought...
The news that...
That GM had filed for bankruptcy. John DeLorean, for those of us old enough to remember, was really the first high-profile prophet of doom for General Motors in his 1979 book, On a Clear Day You Can See General Motors. He had been the up-and-coming rising star, the father of the Pontiac GTO and the Firebird, and then he was head of Chevy and he was head of all GM, and then abruptly resigned in 1973 saying he was going to go work on social issues or something. Well, what he immediately went to do was to blab to Patrick Wright for this book about his frustrations in the bureaucracy of General Motors and whatnot. And then
he backed away.
He balked because he was about ready to start his sports car company, and he's afraid GM would try to crush him like a bug. So Pat Wright then went and published the book himself 4 years later. But at any rate, and the book was a sensation at the time, and it really did establish DeLorean as sort of the first big high-profile critic of GM. And of course, we all know what DeLorean went through afterward with the sports car company. We've all seen the car on Back to the Future movies, and then
the cocaine indictment.
indictment, you know, with
which
the cockamamie
scheme.
Which
is probably what he'll unfortunately be most remembered for.
Right. So at any rate, John died in 2005, and I didn't realize he was buried here in Whitechapel Cemetery, but I was doing some research over the weekend trying to think of something profound to say on the eve of the GM bankruptcy, and going back through all of the historic critics of GM, because one of my thoughts was, this is a company that's always been trying to fix itself. From the very beginning, I mean, it was formed in turmoil mm-hmm. by Billy Durant, who put all these car companies together, and then he got fired and bumped out, and then he came back and he took it over and he got fired again. And I mean, it was born in chaos and then had a nice run under Alfred Sloan. But it's been pretty much in chaos for the last 40 years. And
well, their best run really was from the mid-50s to the mid to late 70s. You know, the one thing DeLorean did when he left, do you remember this? He made this big pronouncement that he was going to make responsible cars with Allstate. He teamed up with Allstate because he was looking for money. And he said, well, you know, Allstate, and they were pushing the airbag. And I, you know, John was really talented, but he did go off the rails.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is an indication how tough it is to come up with little new car companies now.
Yeah.
The road is scattered with these. And all the and this is a guy who came from the industry who knew more than most. And that's right. Why it's so hard to
start over. DeLorean, there were so many problems. I mean, it was just problematic the way it was set up, it was terribly underpowered. I mean, it was a nightmare.
The car was a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Okay, it really was. And it was only resurrected thanks to Michael J. Fox in the movie and
right.
Spielberg.
Right. Well, it was always a cool-looking car. Was it a Bertone design? I mean, when I kind of think of it now, it seems, but I can't remember who designed that.
I thought it was Giugiaro.
I thought it was Giugiaro, too.
Okay, I'm wrong, but it's a cool-looking car. I mean, it's a striking-looking car even today.
The Fiero was a great-looking car.
The later versions were good cars.
You know, there's more to this business than design. Design is important. It's so important. But if you don't have the guts underneath a car, it'll die. We've seen it in so many models.
Right. Jason, we got to talk about something that just broke today. I mean, just broke this afternoon. The story about the Viper that Chrysler or Bob Nardelli, in testifying to Congress, said, "Oh, we can't find anybody to buy this thing." But in fact, there were some buyers. Tell what's going on here.
Well, it broke in the Wall Street Journal and then on Bloomberg. And Congressman Issa of California is accusing Mr. Nardelli of lying. That there were, in fact, buyers offering more than what he said to the bankrupt judge. Moch, the attorney made famous by the breastplant implants, that scare, made a fortune. Ferrari enthusiast, he and his counterpart, Dave Draper, who was the head of Cars and Concepts, is out in the press saying, "We offered well more than this." And the congressman is accusing...
Because Chrysler's saying, "Hey, we didn't get any bids on this." And in fact, after the bankruptcy, we only got a bid that was for $3.5 million. And these guys are saying, "Hey, wait a minute, we offered them $35 million. What about us?"
And Chrysler's coming out with statements saying it didn't quite meet everything, and so our chairman was right. This is going to be a big story. This could explode.
But why would it be? I mean, in the sense that these investors are offering $35 million to buy the whole Viper operation, lock, stock, and barrel, which is a bargain, a real bargain. In the grand scheme of Chrysler's bankruptcy, $35 million bucks or whatever, or three and a half of whatever Chrysler is claiming it to be, what's the big deal?
The big deal is that there's a lot of Republicans that feel burned by this. They're trying to do whatever they can, even though I'm a rabid Republican. I think they look stupid. The fact is they may be trying for a little win here to say, the chairman lied. Let's derail this for a couple days. I don't think this is not going to derail the whole process. It's going to go through, even though we have these dealers coming in complaining, and we're going to have a hearing on Tuesday, and we have the Indiana treasurer that's being a pain in the royal butt and has no vision for what a liquidation of Chrysler will do to his state. It'll all go through. But this is trouble. If it is true...
If you're caught lying, even if it's not for a paltry amount in the big scheme of things, you were caught lying in front of Congress.
Hey, right. The mayor of the city of Detroit was caught lying about having sex, and he lost his job. This could be real trouble. This story could explode over the next couple days. I hope Chrysler has some background, some backup on this, but on the surface, with personal knowledge and knowing who's out there bidding on this, this is trouble for the chairman, mm-hmm. not necessarily for Chrysler. I hope it's not trouble for Chrysler because it's a small, piddly-ass issue. But it could be trouble for Mr. Nardelli.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like getting the Viper operations, though, for $35 million, that's got to be a pretty good deal for these guys.
Chrysler wanted $100 million initially. In this market, when the fuel prices went up and so forth, Fiat probably wouldn't want it. They have Ferrari. No, they have
Maserati.
And Ferrari.
Why would they want it? But it could be a jewel for somebody else.
Buying it at a pretty low price.
Yeah.
And, I don't know what their financials are on Viper, but it seems to me $35 million for all that is a bargain. I mean, I think Chrysler originally spent $80 million tooling the car up in the very first place.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's an incredibly loyal owner body, and not in the millions or tens of thousands, but certainly in the thousands of well-heeled people that would love, you know, they're passionate. They want the next one. And if there could be a green Viper, you know, whatever. And there are people that have talked about having a green Viper. That's a beautiful part of this business, the passionate people, the people that will spend $250,000 for a sports car, or in the Viper's case, $80,000 or so. They're passionate about their automobiles, and they don't care about what they don't care about the greenies. They'll pay, and they don't want their legacy and their passion to die. That just ruins it. So,
and Bob Lutz will be on the market next year. He can help design the next one.
There he is.
Sadly.
Bob, if you're watching, you know we love you.
Well, that's the breaking news this afternoon, but the big news really this week has been GM filing for Chapter 11. Peter, that's got to be the most historic thing that certainly has happened in GM's history, but in the history of the American auto industry.
Well, absolutely. I mean, we're not just talking about a car company. This was an iconic corporate juggernaut that as much represented the upward trajectory of American power and industriousness and just the command of all that it surveys, and it's a terrible thing. You know, it's not, you know, people outside of this town or whatever far away just dismiss it. Oh, it's no big deal. It's a very big deal. I think it's a big deal for the country.
Well, I think the country doesn't realize it.
Oh, absolutely.
And until it starts to hit them, like it is with dealers closing.
Yeah, now all of a sudden
people are going, well, wait a minute. When we said we don't care if they went away, we didn't mean our dealer here locally.
Yeah, I used to get emails, you don't know what you're talking about. We don't care if Detroit goes down. And one guy wrote me and said, you know, I got to take that back. You know, we have a local dealer here who's been part of our community for 75 years, and I could have said I told you so. I didn't. I just said, well, yeah, it's bad. It's a bad situation, you know.
Well, especially when you get in smaller communities where dealers often represent the single greatest source of sales tax and property tax, you know, the thing that pays for schools, fire, police, garbage pickup, all that.
Yeah,
stuff.
Absolutely. And you know, other countries would be hugely embarrassed. Imagine if Germany, if Mercedes-Benz all of a sudden ceased or went into bankruptcy, whatever. I mean, they would take, that would be horrible.
Mm-hmm. Fact is, it wouldn't happen, would it, there?
No, it wouldn't.
It wouldn't, they, yeah, right.
So here, you know, it's easy to dismiss if you don't really give a shit about this business or the Midwest or the flyover state. But it's a blow to this country. I mean, in my, I've been on a soapbox for a long time about the erosion, the continued erosion of America's manufacturing base.
Right. It's not just automotive.
No, it's not just automotive. And people need to wake up and understand that that is a very big deal.
Right.
Because you have to produce goods and services. We cannot be a Starbucks nation of zombie consumers, as I say. You just can't do it. It reminds me of... Remember, did you see WALL-E?
No, yes, I didn't see that.
Remember when you actually see the people? You know, to me, we can't be that way. Right. But, and so if we lose sight of why it's important to remain a manufacturing power and why it's important to the future of this country, then when you look at it that way, what's happened to GM is really, it's a bad thing.
Yeah. Tom, you've been writing about this a lot, too. I mean, what's your overall take?
Well, I think Peter's right. I mean, it really is a big deal, but in the end, I'm wondering if it just had to happen. I wrote a column.
It did.
It did have to happen.
It didn't have to be crunched into this short time frame. That's because the global economy collapsed. But there's no question we had to get rid of these legacy companies excess capacity.
But it was not going to happen without... You know,
a catastrophic upheaval. Implosion.
I wrote a column the day after President Bush gave them the loans, and at that time, Obama had been elected already. And I wrote a column, sort of addressing the president-elect, saying, "Before you do anything else, please, Mr. Obama, because I, as a taxpayer, I don't want my money to go down the drain. As a Detroiter, I want to see these companies saved. Please." Give us a kick-butt car czar or something like it that's going to get these stakeholders, the management, the unions, the suppliers, who have been, you know, just putting little Band-Aids over everything for the past 40 years, get them in a room and knock their heads together and don't let them come out until they are really, really competitive. Last week on this show, you guys talked about building cars that were good enough instead of best in class. We did that with our costs, too. We said, well, if we can get close to the Japanese on structural costs, or if we can get in the ballpark. But by the time they got in the ballpark, the Japanese were further down the road and way ahead again. They just, and I understand all of why that was. I mean, the UAW, you're going to go for concessions. They got to get it ratified by 50% of the active workers. That's a very difficult thing to do. I understand why it was incremental, why it was so difficult to do, and maybe this was the only way to finally get it done. And I applaud the task force so far for holding everybody's feet to the fire and ramming this thing through. I mean, a lot of people accuse them of running roughshod over.
Well, it helps when the President of the United States says, make it so.
Right. Well, that's what's happening.
I am incredibly pissed at my party, the Republican Party. They didn't vote for the bailout. I understand that. As a Republican, I could understand that. But then now they're trying to protect the dealers and so forth. It's a classic Woody Allen line, you know, the food's terrible and the portions are small. You know, you can be a part of one or the other. Kay Bailey Hutchinson of Texas, if you didn't want them to get bailed out, don't bitch about the dealers going now, because this is a part of the process. It's an orderly process. I got to give Obama and his team credit. This is moving lickety-split. Chrysler's going to get out of this probably next week. It's a great blueprint for GM because long bankruptcies. This guy over here has been talking about the B word and how it's killing him. Getting out of that, moving on. And those that are trying to slow it down, including my party, is reprehensible. And may send one or both into liquidation. Because let's face it, over the last 5 years, the dealers themselves have been total rabid agreement that they have to reduce their force. They all want to do it. And now we finally had a mechanism for the automakers to do it without costing them a fortune. So what are we bitching about?
Well, because maybe we who are not dealers are not bitching, but the dealers who are dealers are bitching because in many cases, they're just being wiped out, just wiped out. And, you know, what they look at is, hey, the union got all the VEBA money, the bondholders or the debt holders got all this money, and a lot of us are just getting wiped out, completely wiped out. And so the dealers I've talked to have all said, look, we understand there's too many dealers, and we understand that they've got to get rid of. But let's let the market take place, take care of this. And in about 5 years, we're going to get there anyway.
We can't take 5 years. We cannot do that. And we hear these Pollyanna stories, and the media likes to pick up. The media is covering every part of this. They love to hear the dealer going, I was successful and so forth, and now my town won't have a dealership. And my people, I heard the story today, that want to get warranty work are going to have to drive 15 miles in their Iowa town. I grew up in Iowa, a little small town. They're going to have to drive 15 miles now. We're in Metro Detroit. We drive 45 minutes to go to a restaurant.
Right.
And most people drive in most towns drive 20 minutes to get to a doctor. Let's stop this crap. Mm-hmm. And for the media's part, stop this crap. Let's talk about, you know, real.
But, you know, make no mistake about it. I mean, you know, it's the task force that gave both GM and Chrysler a quota and said, you know, based on our studies and what you told us and blah, 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 here's how many dealers you got to get rid of. Go make it so. And I understand the need to get rid of them, but I also understand that certain parties in these bankruptcies are getting money, and big money, tens of billions of dollars. And other people, mainly mom-and-pop type bond buyers, investors, and mom-and-pop type dealers are getting wiped out, absolutely just wiped out.
For the most part, no. The dealers are getting, they're losing their franchises, have another franchise. Or in the Chrysler situation, they were the Jeep dealer or whatever, they were the Dodge dealer or whatever, or more importantly, they sold very few new cars.
Yeah, but that's like,
period.
Man, we're wiping out every investment that you made with us. Good thing you got something else to keep you going.
No, let me go back to the last part of what I said. They weren't selling a lot of new cars. They were using their dealership to be a used car lot. And they were using the brand names up there. They sold very few cars. So if you're selling used cars,
there are dealers like that. There's also big ones. Big ones get wiped out.
Along Ford here in Metro Detroit
is
not Along Ford. It's Along Auto Center.
Right.
They're not going to sell new cars.
Right. But they got bought out by the company. They got bought out by the company. And I don't know what the price was. And maybe it wasn't the best price, but Ford bought them out. And there's other dealers here in town, not just here in town, across the country. And you're right. There's small ones, and, you know, they're not going to be hurting. But there are other people who had the total misfortune of having both GM brands that are getting shut down and losing their Chrysler store. And they got nothing now. I mean, nothing.
Yeah.
And like I'm saying, Jason, other parties, bigger, better organized, a much more expensive lawyers are getting billions out of it.
I think that's too simplistic. I mean, not that lawyer influence doesn't matter, but remember, the very nature of bankruptcy, you go in there because you can't pay your bills. So a lot of people aren't going to get paid. Everybody's going to get screwed. Now, some people are going to get screwed worse than others, but one piece of this, in addition to who has influence, is you got to keep the companies running. If they don't run, they're liquidated.
Everybody
gets nothing.
Right.
So they're going to keep the suppliers, the key suppliers. They're going to get paid pretty much everything they're owed. So, and everything goes down the scale from there. Everybody that's critical to keep the company functioning is going to get more. The people who they don't need to keep the company going, like all those extraneous dealers, are going to be at the bottom end of the ladder.
All I'm saying is they're printing stock for everybody. Why don't they print some stock for some of these mom-and-pop bond investors and some of these mom-and-pop, or maybe even not so much mom-and-pop, dealerships? At least just print them some stock. It seems like they're printing everybody some stock.
Well, maybe that's how the government settles up on appeals down the road, give them some of that government stock.
The sad thing is, you know, the thought of, where am I going to get my car serviced?
Now the dealer's going away. Fact is, most people don't get their car serviced at a dealer anyway.
Well, even
so
if they,
these false arguments,
be plenty of parts and plenty of mechanics who know how to work on.
We need
cars.
A strong
service
dealer.
Is not going to be a problem.
We need a strong dealer body in all franchises, and this will make it a strong dealer part. And by the way, you have to take pain. That's what Tom is saying. Somebody's got to suffer.
I'm not saying. I think everybody's got to suffer and are suffering. All I'm saying is that if you're a union and politically connected, if you are bondholders and get together and are large financial institutions and so on and so forth, they're going to take care of you. You're still going to take a haircut, but they're going to give you something. And it's the little people that are just getting squashed and getting nothing. And that's what I'm saying is just wrong. They should get stock something. I mean, you're printing stock for everybody? Print some more. But here's the real question on the GM thing, I think. What we should really be talking about is...
Let's talk about where they're going now.
That's
next.
Exactly what I wanted to say. Yeah. So, Peter, they're running an ad... GM is all about how, in fact, I think we got this queued up. We should play it in
a
minute.
Yeah, we should play it.
You know, all about trying to establish what the new GM is about. Ben, do you got that? Can you put that on?
Let's be completely honest. No company wants to go through this. But we're not witnessing the end of the American car. We're witnessing the rebirth of the American car. General Motors needs to start over in order to get stronger. There was a time when 8 different brands made sense. Not anymore. There was a time when our cost structure could compete worldwide. Not anymore. Reinvention is the only way we can fix this. And fix it, we will. So here's what the new GM is going to be. Fewer, stronger brands. Fewer, stronger models. Greater efficiencies. Better fuel economy. And new technologies. Leaner, greener, faster, smarter. This is not about going out of business. This is about getting down to business. Because the only chapter we're focused on is chapter one.
Let me point out a few things as an ad farmer.
Yeah.
Ad person. They deliberately used a lot of pickup footage. This is not, you know, in the old days of to do a corporate spot like that, you'd go out and spend $2 million shooting it, all beautiful new locations. I mean, that's a lot of pickup footage, pickup stills, and it's really.
So you don't mean pickup trucks? You mean literally just
picking up existing?
Yeah. Right.
And you know, I think it's
flip art.
Yeah, it's pretty predictable. It's pretty predictable. I don't know if it does anything for them. I don't think it does a damn thing for them. I'm more interested in what GM is about product-wise going forward. You know, I did that thing last week in the Design Dome and talked to Lutz and Ed Welburn and Tom Stevens. And
yeah, what Peter's talking about is he went out there and interviewed these guys, and we've got that on our website.
Yeah, and, you know, they had the array of the new GM products encircling us, and they've got some fabulous stuff, and they've got some great stuff coming. They even took us out to the famous design patio. You know, people outside this business, if they've never been to the tech center, it's one of the coolest places to go, because when you think about when it was designed in the 50s, I mean, it's...
By Eero Saarinen.
Right. Yep. And the Design Dome is just this fabulous place, and they have this special viewing courtyard that has turntables built into the cobblestones. And, you know, Mitchell would put stuff out there, and Earl, and they showed us the mysterious black vault, which really changes your impression of the vault immediately.
What do you mean mysterious, and why did it change?
Well, because, you know, no one has seen the vault in any other color but the silver, and it was the final production for real, and it was amazingly enough a really good-looking car, you know, whether it was electric or powered by, you know, chipmunks, it doesn't matter. I mean, it looked good. But GM going forward, it's all about the product. They've got some great products going.
So you don't like this ad. You think they should have focused on those things, the new Camaro.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and the thing is convincing consumers to even consider General Motors is really the marketing challenge of automotive history,
should
in my opinion.
Should they even be marketing General Motors?
Well, that's what we talked about a few weeks ago. I think GM, you know, could easily, you know, stand down.
Right.
And talk about Chevrolet, Cadillac. I mean, the new Cadillacs. I mean, the Cadillac lineup is sensational. Yeah. Why don't, you know, I don't see enough of it.
Right.
What was, I mean, was that a 30-second ad or a 60?
That's a 60.
Yeah. You saw the first beginning, it looked like the day after tomorrow. And then we show a New York skyline and then Detroit. And people don't know Detroit skylines outside if it's a national ad. And we got into the last 10 seconds where we said we're going to get there again. So it was an apology ad again.
Yeah.
You had very little product. If you want to tell
hockey players and football players.
A hockey player with his face down.
Olympics. Yeah, hockey player with his face
planted. What do you make of it, Jason? You're a communications guy. What do you make of this ad and what the message it's trying to convey to the American public?
I love the background music. You know that's a GM ad. Ding, 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 ding. But get there and positive and show the product. There's some the best product they've ever had, but this parking lot full of crap, and I don't want to hear this. And if I'm outside of our little cocoon of the auto industry, if I'm a consumer, I'm going, what in the hell is all this? The Joe Louis fist? What is this? People building houses. Show me the cars, the beauty shots driving down the road and interiors and how good this stuff. Blast it. Your car's a car of the year.
Well, I understand that they're trying to sort of make the nod, okay, we didn't want to be here, and they show a few green cars and whatnot. But then it's kind of like that, you know, instead of Chapter 11, this can be Chapter 1. It's almost kind of a nod to Job 1 and Ford, which is, of course, eating their lunch right now. And they're afraid they're going to eat their lunch for a long time.
This is like a governor that cheated on his wife, and they had an embarrassing press conference with the wife there, and he admitted, and she sits there, and everybody goes, well, it's tort. And then a year later, at every press conference, he starts off with, I know I cheated on my wife, and I won't do it again. I mean, let's move on. Mm-hmm. Let's get rid of the B word. Let's just be positive. Let's talk about the products that are kicking butt out there. Sales are improving. The market looks like it's improving. Let's get out of this crap.
Somewhat, yeah.
I mean, the word of mouth on the Camaro is sensational.
Right.
Get a chance to show a Camaro.
Well, can it do what the ad promises? Can we see a vibrant, a leadership company come out of these ashes?
If everything falls into place just so, yes. But there are no guarantees, and there's a lot of potholes to come. If the economy turns around and there's some momentum, they have a real shot because they have excellent products, the best they've ever had, competitive, much more competitive than people give them credit for, as we all know. I mean, we've driven them.
But this is all due to Bob Lutz. What's your sense? I mean, he's going to retire at the end of the year. In fact, I'll bet you the phase-out has already started. But what's your sense going forward?
Tom Stevens?
Not just Tom Stevens, but the whole system. I mean, Bob, as you know, he cast an aura that went beyond just the slot of being in charge of product development.
Well, as I said,
it's a much bigger.
Yeah,
I don't want to call it shadow. It's like a radiance that went well beyond that.
As I said on the site, the stuff people didn't see Bob do is the real important stuff. He streamlined their product development function. Well, he not only brought it up into contemporary modern times from the Stone Age, he actually put in place a system that should serve them well. Yeah, that should serve them well. I refer to it as the behind-the-curtain stuff Bob did was even more important than the beautiful sheet metal we see in the really cool cars, because the behind-the-curtain stuff set up General Motors for the future. But, you know, you're right. Bob is, I mean, once-in-a-lifetime guy, and all of a sudden he takes his leave at the end of the year.
Right.
So it's, who knows? I mean, Ed Welburn has a fabulous team. Ed's done a sensational job.
I totally agree.
GM, you know, GM set the tone for design from the 50s all the way through the early 70s, first with Harley Earl, then Bill Mitchell. Ed Welburn has brought that design function back to prominence.
But a key reason being because Lutz helped him do that.
Oh, absolutely. The first thing Lutz did is he had his office at design for the first 6 months he was at General Motors.
Because let's even, you know, he cuts Wayne Cherry a lot of slack, saying Wayne never had a chance. And I believe that because if you look at
and Wayne started some good stuff before Bob got there.
Well, not only that, but look what he did in Europe.
Yeah.
I mean, they had great looking designs, I thought, at Opel.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know.
Absolutely.
Obviously, the guy had the chops, just didn't have the chance.
Yeah.
Well, I think GM's very sensitive to this whole thing with Lutz, too, because on the conference call the other day when Fritz, the day of the bankruptcy, I asked a question because Fritz had earlier said we might be shaking up top management and cutting there, too. And I said, when's that going to happen? And people are wondering, Bob Lutz is sort of phasing out. What's the new management team? And Fritz made a point to say lots of nice things about Tom Stevens and that Bob Lutz's system would go on. And I wasn't, you know, off that conference call for 3 hours before I had a call from, you know, Tom Stevens' communications guy saying, you want to come over and spend some time with Tom and get over the design dome? They do have their head in this, which is good. I think they understand that the next phase after all this has to be all about product.
Yeah, I spent time with Tom. John was out of town, and I filled in. And you know, Tom's a hardcore engine guy.
Oh, yeah.
You know his background. I mean, he's worked on some of the coolest stuff GM's ever done. So he certainly has a feel for where the company needs to go and what's been set in place. So,
but he's not the flashiest guy in the world, but he's got some chomps there.
Yeah.
He's got the pedigree to pull this off.
But, you know, what I wonder is, you know, getting back to the statement that you mentioned, Tom, of Fritz Henderson saying they're going to have shakeup at the top.
Right.
Are these guys the right ones to lead GM forward? And the only reason I ask that is because much of the leadership that I've admired in the past are the very guys who ran this company into the ground. And so you got to say, should we have different viewpoints, i.e. new people coming in, looking at this thing differently? Obviously, the task force looked at it very differently. And again, as I say, when the president of the United States says make it so, it makes things go a whole lot faster and easier. But are these GM guys who have grown up in the system the right ones for the company going forward?
Well, that's exactly the question. And I actually got a chance to talk to Larry Summers from the White House the other day from the task force and just put that question to him. You guys say you're really not going to try to run this car business, you know, at least the minutiae of it, but your first action was to fire the CEO. How do you justify that? He said, well, you got to look at it as an investor. Are you going to go in and spend a lot of money on, you know, on this investment that's lost $82 billion in the last 4 years, and are you going to keep the CEO? I mean, it's just like it was incredible to him that anybody in Detroit could be thinking that a CEO could survive at the beginning of this process. That said, he said, now we leave it to the car guys. But I think his overall sense was, you know, they want to invest in a management team. And I think Fritz understands that. I think he's got to do two things. He's got to cut management symbolically as much as the rest of the white-collar workforce has been cut, just to show that the little people, that the big people are getting whacked too. And then secondly, I think at some point he probably does need to bring in some new blood. I don't know who that is, but where it is. Exactly.
And speaking of Bob, once in a lifetime, look at Alan Mulally. He's once-in-a-lifetime guy.
And is an outsider who is from the outside.
Come in from the outside and do what he's done.
And
I mean, you don't just...
transformed the company.
Yes, absolutely. And you just don't find those guys walking around the street, you know. I mean, it just happened to work. Bill Ford went with his gut, and it turned out to be a brilliant move.
What's next?
Well, we can change topics then, too. What about May sales, Jason? You mentioned that earlier, that things look like they're perking up.
They're not great, but certainly when they're down 25 to 40%, they're still crappy. But
that's compared to a year ago. And as I'm fond of saying now, you may as well compare car sales to the Middle Ages.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that was a different world.
They're progressing.
But April to May was up.
They were up substantially. From the folks at Chrysler, they look, you know, their year-to-year sales were awful, but it was a better. GM had a much better jump.
Right at the end.
Yeah, right at the end.
And Ford even more so.
Yes. Good news for Chrysler is these dealers that are going to be let go, they're being let go, boom, like this. GM's letting them go over about the next 14 months. Of the 42,000 or so units out there that were in their inventory, 40,000 are called for by other dealers. So they're going to be shipped to other dealers, so it's not going to be the fire sale. So that's good news.
Yeah, but I'll bet you those dealers are getting a good price on those vehicles.
I didn't say that they weren't getting a fire sale. But the good news is in the outward public, it's not going to be a fire sale to keep the value up of those cars. We'll see. I mean, consumer confidence had a little bit of a jump last month. We have to take ourselves out of where we live, which is Michigan, which is a one-state depression.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just brutal.
And it's only going to get worse.
All right.
We got a lot of people coming off the unemployment rolls.
Yeah, right.
In August, we have a tsunami going to hit us. But nationwide, the housing market looked a little better and so forth. California is still in
the crap. Stock market's picking up a little bit.
I heard the other day that as of yesterday, stocks were only 1% below where they were on January 1.
Right.
Stay long in
We're not drowning as badly. Yahoo!
Yeah, we're 1 inch. We're still drowning.
And is there some credit out there? You know, a lot of people think, Americans are going to be frugal now for a long time. You know, I think history, at least recent history, tells us that if somebody will lend them money, they'll buy stuff. And if credit does start to loosen, I think it's gradually loosening.
It's going to take a while. I mean, how about Ford's market share?
Yeah.
I mean, it's all bad. I mean, let's make, you know.
It's a little tiny pie you buy at the convenience store.
Yeah, let's not, we don't have any illusions. This is all bad sales numbers. But in the sea of bad, their market share is, it's kind of eye-opening.
Yep, and I mean, after a horrible fall
for
a decade.
So we're getting close to our rapid fire.
We are, yeah. We got to make sure everybody sends in their questions and comments. I'm going towards website right now just to get the actual sales and market share numbers.
Well, I could read some of the AE headlines of the decade.
Cool. Do it. I'll look up sales and you go to that.
Did you see that? You probably didn't see that, Jen.
I didn't.
First headline was White Boy Culture. That was about the deal on Detroit, you know, how it really was you had to be a 35 to 50-year-old white male and, you know. Write hard, die free. That was for me. You know, that was just doing the damn thing. That was at the end of the first year. Captain Zarello, your spaceship is waiting.
Where is he now?
Yeah, where is he?
He went to Bausch & Lomb.
Oh, I know that.
Yeah, is he still there?
Because
it
was at Bausch & Lomb where it was found out that he had lied about his MBA at Columbia.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I think he's finally left Bausch & Lomb, but I'm not sure.
Huh.
We don't have to worry about old Ronnie. He's got a ton of money.
He's off in a spaceship.
Memo to Chris Bangle, the emperor is naked. GM's culture of invincibility, 2003. Detroit's real challenge, selling the idea of an American car, 2003. How much longer can Detroit extract blood from a stone? That was about, you know, beating the stuff to death. Benchmarking, Detroit's ticket to oblivion. Toyota's shiny, happy people peg the stupid meter. Turn out the lights, the party's over. Detroit is officially out of ideas. That was in 2005. This wasn't meant at you, Jason, but I know you laughed at it. The Auto Extremist Self-Help Guide, How Not to Be a PR Weasel.
I remember that one.
He agrees. He's wearing the hat.
The NASCAR bubble coming to a boardroom near you. That was in 2005. Well, anyway.
What happens? Okay. Let's say Chrysler gets done next week. Fiat takes it over.
What happens?
What do you do? At your Marchione, what do you do to survive?
Until they can get the new product.
Yep.
First thing I do is I take every Chrysler product that they're building right now today and figure out how I can sell it outside of the United States. And find there's going to be little niches here and there around the world where they can pack it into a Fiat dealership, whether it's Indonesia or Brazil or wherever it happens to be, and start seeing, can I start getting more volume out of what I've already invested in? That would be one of my first things, is looking at how do I take Chrysler to where Fiat is strong, and not in Europe, obviously, because Chrysler is already distributed there.
So it's, what is it, and what those, and what products are those? I mean, Jeep Wranglers? And
Jeep
what
Wranglers,
else?
Minivans, Dodge Ram trucks. I mean, the kind of vehicles that nobody else elsewhere in the world builds, but somebody's going to go somewhere in some country, hey, that's just what I need.
Well, they're already building in Taiwan for China, right? Jeeps are sold throughout the world. 300 is sold in Europe, where they haven't done well is in South America.
Where Fiat's very strong.
That's right.
Brazil and Argentina, they know what they're doing there.
How much of the product line do you think he's going to kill right off the start, as soon as he can?
Well, you know, they've already announced Sterling Heights Assembly is going away. So well, it's, Sebring and Avenger gone.
Yeah, kind of idled, though. They're hoping that they can bring that one back.
I think that's a possibility. But, you know, those two go.
Caliber's gone.
Caliber's gone. Patriot's gone. Or I don't... Compass is gone, for sure.
Can Fiat come back as a brand?
No. I wouldn't even try it. Except as a little niche player, as in the 500.
I would like to, if someone called me and said, would you run the relaunch of Fiat with only the 500 in this country, I'd give it a shot. Because I think... when people really see it driving around, they really spark.
They love it.
I mean, if they can do it with Mini, you can do it with the 500.
I don't know if the Alpha brand would ever be big enough to stand alone as its own brand here, but maybe you do a combo Fiat. Maybe you do even Lancia, too. Fiat, Lancia, Alfa Romeo, and make that the quote-unquote Fiat brand.
But are you going to have to build new stores? Or you take the current distributors. Don't you? I mean, that's the beauty of buying the Chrysler.
Oh, yeah. No, it's got to be part of the Genesis program of combining Chrysler, Jeep, Dodge. And now you got this cool Fiat stuff. But, you know, again, they're going to face the same challenge that Volkswagen does. If you build stuff in euros and sell it at mass market dollar prices, it's a recipe for disaster. Now, if you're Mercedes, BMW, you can bite the bullet as far as the exchange rates go. But importing Fiats, that's why the Cinquecento, the 500, it's going to be priced like the Mini. You know, they'll have this little base price that nobody's going to want, and the average transaction will be like $26,000 or something.
When
like
did
that.
Fiat leave this market?
87.
That late?
Yeah.
I was going to say 81,
or 83.
82.
Hey, okay. 83.
So a whole generation has not had the ability, including, you know, as I got to be an adult and to buy a car for my kids, nothing about Fiat. I think they have an opportunity to come in here almost fresh.
Yeah, they do. But again, I think they've got to do it with cool niche products, at least to start with.
I actually think they could put the Fiat badge on it.
Hey, do we have the list? We got to get the rapid fire.
Run the promo.
Yeah. Ben? So you know how this worked, Tom? You know, you get a minute. You know, Ben will throw up the graphic of it. It
of
looks
minute.
Like a fuel economy gauge going down, and you'll hear it dinging, warning us.
Should we do 2 minutes?
One minute.
But it's 1 minute now. So here we go. Michael Weber asks, wasn't it Robert McNamara's success at Ford that showed Detroit that mathematical management was a very powerful tool?
Yeah, it was a very powerful tool, extremely powerful tool. It was maybe also the demise, the beginning of the demise, because that's when the MBAs really took over in the auto industry and sort of, you know, brushed the real car guys aside. And that's when they began focusing on shareholder value and return instead of on great product.
Yeah, but if it wasn't for the total performance Ford effort in the 60s to counterbalance that Ford, who knows, Ford might not even be here right now.
Yeah.
Tom?
Yep. I pass.
Okay, yeah.
Pass? That's a violation of the rapid fire. Okay. From Salvador G., how much blame do you think can be placed on,
quote, scary talking heads in the media for GM and Chrysler's downfall. Tom?
None. It's always blame the media. These guys have been doing lots of bad things for decades and decades, and it's just silly.
Yeah, to me, it's like there's a lot of boneheads in the media. Do they pour gasoline on the fire? You bet they do. But the industry caused the fire.
Yeah, I absolutely agree.
I love this one. Don't start the time. Mud Monster 37 asks, "How's that working out for you?" Obviously, an early listener. And Mud Monster, I hope you're a 17-year-old girl like my daughter is. Reno Diggs asks, and start the clock, are there any real car guys left in GM?
Oh, absolutely.
You bet.
I mean, when you spend some time anywhere around GM, the place is crawling with them.
And some key people. I mean, you know, we were talking about Tom Stevens earlier. He's truly a car guy. This guy, John Lochner, who's been working underneath Bob Lutz in product development, this guy knows product. And, you know, I almost hate to single them out because we won't list dozens and dozens and dozens of others. There are real car people.
They're all over the company. Yeah. Trust us on that one.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. We maybe can do two and one. John Wills asks, when will the new Chinese Hummer come to a dealer near you?
Well, it won't be because they're going to be building in Louisiana for the time being.
Yep. But you got to wonder what the Chinese are thinking long term. I'm sure they would love to build stuff in China, too.
Well, I see there's going to be a plan in China eventually.
Right.
Maybe they'll do one of those things where they disassemble the Louisiana facility and ship it to China and then reassemble it. It's just like, how did they do that?
Question, will it be called the Hummel?
I ain't touching that one.
Okay. So GM, this is from Bad Nickel on Twitter, good name. GM and Chrysler can't be sued for product defects.
Yeah, this was a big thing that came out today. Clarence Ditlow from the Center for Auto Safety, he doth protest that no money has been set aside for product liability. In other words, the plaintiff attorneys want some of this bailout money to be set aside so that when they sue these car companies, there's money to pay the lawyers.
As a person that has fought these plaintiff's attorneys through Ford Firestone and all of my safety stuff, this is the greatest day in my life. And Clarence, sleep well. Bad Nickel also asks, I guess they have no reason to issue recalls either. No. We still have the NHTSA.
Oh, yeah.
We still have laws in this country.
Right, yeah. No, if they have a defective car, especially safety-related, it will be issued a recall.
And people will be sued.
Yes. This is America.
Okay, we'll move on.
And Dave E. asks, anyone know what's in the garage of Tom Stevens? Lutz replacement.
You know, it's a funny thing. I asked him that. He and a buddy of his have something like 30 cars, and he started rattling them off to me, and my eyes just got bigger and bigger as he went.
And they're all high performance.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, Tom, as Jason said, is not the sort of charismatic kind of character that Bob Lutz is, but his guys, as we set up a meeting for down the road, sent me some old pictures of Tom Stevens, and, you know, and he was a long-haired guy with a beard, and he's in the garage with his motorcycles and his little Corvettes and all this kind of stuff in the 70s.
And he's kept a lot of them. He rattled off some stuff, and
he's got some real muscle in his barn. It's not just a garage.
No, it's a big place.
Craig Mellor on Twitter asks, why is the U.S. so diesel-phobic?
Well, we're not. I mean, I keep trying to point this out. Everybody, I'll bet you, I wish I had a dollar for everyone who says, how come diesels are popular in Europe, not here? Number one, our emission standards are outrageously more stringent than Europe's are in terms of meeting it from a cost standpoint. So you're adding, like, on a V6 diesel, Mercedes, BMW, they're adding between $4,000 and $5,000 just in the emissions equipment. And then you have crazy fluctuating diesel fuel prices because we don't refine as much diesel as Europe does. And, you know, last summer it was $1 a gallon more for diesel. Yep. Right now it's cheaper than regular gasoline.
You can't tell exactly.
Once again, back to Bad Nickel on Twitter. I've seen zero ads from Ford. Remember Bill Ford in 2002 and reassurance spots. His confidence gone at Ford. Maybe it's just me. Bad Nickel.
It's just you.
And you're going to see a whole lot more in the next few weeks.
Yeah.
Mud Monster 37. John, what would you have done with Pontiac?
I'll give Bob Lutz's line. You know, I still think that I think pay the government off, bring Pontiac back. That's what I would do as a niche brand. The GA.
Yeah, I asked him that.
Yeah, you did. And essentially, he didn't quite say that. But what Lutz does say, and you can check out the interview, it's going to be on our website, is that it should be a niche brand.
It was funny. He said, if it were up to me or something like that.
Right. In fact, they tell you, he says something to the effect of, Bob, it's done, you know, like drop it.
Yeah, Jason will like watching that interview, I think.
Oh, I think so.
President Obama on Twitter asks, how long do you think GM will stay in their surgical bankruptcy? Actually, it's Jim asks.
64 days.
Are we doing a little pool here?
Yeah, let's do a pool.
Okay, it's $10, okay?
Okay.
64 days, and that started Monday. John?
I'll say 64. I'll say 75 days.
77.
He's trying to cut it close. He really thinks 120.
That is what I'm getting, 120.
Okay.
Because some of the crap now coming out of Chrysler is going to bleed on them, 120. Yeah, and maybe we could have our people watching Twitter or whatever, what they think. How long will GM stay in bankruptcy Monday till the official day they come out of it?
Sadly, and I think Jason's going to win that one.
Bob's going in. Whoever wins gets AutoLine
coffee cup. We'll mail you one.
Some of Peter's M&Ms. We'll save one bag for you after we eat the chocolate off of them. John Wills asks, whatever happened to the Ford GT?
Well, they said, we're going to build 5,000 of these things and break the dies, and that's it. And they stayed to their word.
And the resale is absolutely bulletproof.
Is it really?
Oh, yeah.
Beautiful car.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, stunningly, I think.
The coolest thing about the Ford GT, everything was cool about it, but the sound of it.
Driving it.
Yeah.
We had that little window, and there's the blower. I mean, this far away from your ear.
The only thing, I was spoiled because a guy, an old acquaintance of mine, let me drive a full race 289 GT40 with Webers and open pipes out on the streets in West Bloomfield. Was absolutely the coolest thing. It was a red car with the number circles on it. And I don't know, I forget what road we ran, but it was a two-lane road, and I was going like 130 and like instantly. And the sound was just, but the new car, very cool.
Yeah.
Vic Esposito asks, what will 2016 pickups look like in order to meet the new mileage standards? Good question.
Diesels, for sure. I think that's the one place, you know, talking about diesels earlier. You know, both GM and Ford have fully developed, you know, medium-sized diesel engines, you know, 4.5-liter range, more or less. And those will be out. And I think you're going to see more aerodynamics, more lightweighting, i.e. more expensive materials. But and you might see some of these trucks go on allocation where 3/4 of the way through the year they go, oh, my God,
we
bumped up against our CAFE limits. Stop building those trucks.
Actually, if you have a long memory and you have access to source books, go look up Subaru 360. Remember that little Remember that little that was bad.
Weirdo car.
Pedro Fernandez asks, how much do you blame the all-out move to front-wheel drive in the late 70s, early 80s on hurting General Motors?
Well, not at all, because if you remember, when CAFE first came out, GM was in still really good shape. Ford was starting to bleed red ink, and Chrysler became the K-car company. Yep. And General Motors was the only one that had the money to do front-wheel drive across the line. And if you remember at the time, they gained market share at that point.
Yeah.
And it came out of Chrysler and Ford's hide. So I don't blame front-wheel drive for their demise.
I agree.
Vic also asked, put Jay Leno in charge of GM. he would give GM the credibility they need. Vic, that's not a question.
It's not.
So remember,
we talked about having new blood. You know, putting Jay Leno on the board of General Motors would not hurt them at all. I think it could help them.
Give me 6 months. Give me 6 months to run GM, boy. I'll tell you what, you'd see some positive stuff going on.
And you do.
And Jason, you would be my PR guy.
And we would do a collaboration with Fuking.
Yeah, we would.
Scott in Cleveland asked, do you ever think we'll see another GM El Camino or Ford Ranchero?
Well, we almost saw an El Camino with the Pontiac.
The G8 version.
Yeah, the G8.
No, I mean, you never say never in
the
business.
Yeah, you never.
And, you know, who knows, the next generation El Camino could be an all-electric. You know, it's still a popular body style. I should say popular in amongst the public, even though they don't go out and buy it. People love that look. And yeah, if you can put the numbers together, there's a niche there to do it.
Retro, everything comes back at some point. Maybe not Gremlins.
No, or what did we talk about? The
Pacers?
Pacer.
No, Subaru 360s.
Do you remember that little?
I do remember that. In fact, Mazda, then more popularly known as Toyo Kogyo, had another weirdo bubble car like that that had very little body panels on it, and they actually made the stamping dies out of ceramics. And that's something that I think the industry ought to go back and look at, is ceramic dies. You want to take cost out? There's a way to do niche vehicles.
Should Firethorn ask, should U.S. government money, and I think by that they mean taxpayer money, go to overseas / foreign employees and factories?
Say that again?
Should U.S. government money, the bailout money, right, or the loans, go to overseas?
Oh, I see what they're getting at. You know, like the new Cadillac SRX is going to be assembled in Mexico. So by bailing out GM, money's going.
Or the thought of bringing a small car from China, and now that's
in a global industry, you literally cannot.
But
they will try to separate it as much as they can. You know, get, you know, if you're going to put money into Holden, the Australian government's got to cough up money. Canadian government's going to cough up money. Now, where you get into trouble is, you know, the third world countries, the less developed countries, do they have the money to cough up in Mexico, for example? Yeah.
John Wills asks, what do you think of the latest May 9.8 SAR for the U.S. market, and do you think it's really a signal that the second half of 2009 will be recovery, or just what's expected between April and May in U.S. sales?
I think it's a definite possibility. You know, as we were talking about earlier, the stock market's up, housing sales are looking better. You know, we did see a bump up in sales in May. You know, I've talked with both Ford and General Motors, and what they tell me is there's at least 2 million consumers out there who want to buy a car, who have the money to buy the car. Getting financing's not an issue, but they're just uncertain.
Yeah.
You know, these are uncertain times, so they're sitting on their hands. So, yeah, a little bump in consumer confidence ratings, and you could see as many as 2 million consumers this year jump in on top of what we're already selling at.
I'll end again with Mud Monster 37, who asks, how's that working out for
you? Well, that's it, and we're at the top of the hour here.
And we're 4 minutes from
and
Red Wings hockey.
Remember,
thank God we didn't have to go up against them.
That was 7:40, wasn't it?
No. It starts 8:05. Thank God we didn't have to go against them tonight.
Yeah,
so
really.
Everybody got to watch Autoline After Hours and watch hockey.
Right, and Chip, my producer, is holding up the sign. We're going to have the interviews that Peter did this week with Bob Lutz, Tom Stevens, and Ed Welburn up on our website tomorrow. And we also have exclusive, world-exclusive video of that black Volt that you saw. But we're under embargo on that. We can't run that till next week.
We can talk about that. It looked great.
Oh, yeah. No, we
really
definitely have to do that.
Really good.
So, I mean,
so should we go over some of the words and phrases of auto extremists of the past decade?
Do it.
We all remember the tubes.
Yeah. Yeah, you for GM's headquarters.
Yeah,
right.
The Renson. The answer to the question that absolutely no one is asking. Shiny, happy, flatulence-powered, balsa wood, smiley cars. Heaping, steaming bowl of not good.
I like that. That's my favorite one.
The Rick.
The
maximum Bob. Minimum Bob. Dead car company walking, the Gonster, the Jimbotron. That was for Jim Press. Activate the Jimbotron. When you know at press conferences, he just starts.
Do you know I was swimming this morning?
Clinky and Nightmare, that was for Piak, because I dubbed him Colonel Clank. And every time he destroyed something in the Volkswagen Empire, I called it a Clinky and Nightmare.
Hogan!
The trifecta of not good. And, well, Queen Lagrina, that was Nancy Pelosi. Yeah.
Good stuff.
How many people hit your website this week?
Do you have a collection of these headlines and terminology on the website?
On the site, yeah. It's on the table.
Oh, excellent.
And later on was chrome-plated pitchforks. That was the in Washington. You know, they were coming after Detroit. And one of our recent favorites, MOFO, spelled F-A-U-X.
Okay.
Snarky little PR guy. No, Dieter's snarky little PR guy. That was one you didn't include.
Dieter's
that was me.
Yeah.
And last but not least, notgonnahappen.com.
I love that. I love that. In fact, you could make a small fortune selling bumper stickers on that.
We got the domain name. We're going to do something with that.
That's good. Well, let's wrap it up here. You know, thanks, everybody, for watching. Peter, Jason, Tom. Remember, you can follow us at Twitter. Twitter.com/autoline. Follow Peter at autoextremist, twitter.com/autoextremist. I know there's a twitter.com/freepautos. Do you?
There is.
And you don't have any personal Twitter one, do you?
You know, I probably do, but I can't. It's not coming to me.
And okay. Tom will be conducting graveside tours.
Yeah.
That's right. Somebody was asking me where Sloan was and where Roger Smith was.
And Henry Ford.
I don't know. I'm not normally a cemetery visitor.
Is Sloan in...
I would imagine he's buried in New York. He was a Brooklynite.
Yeah, so. And he did spend a lot of time in the New York headquarters.
Real good. Let's wrap this up.
And go to www.forgottenharvest.com.
That's right.
Excuse me, forgottenharvest.org.
Hey, did you get that email from that reader who said... We should do a fundraiser?
Yes, yeah. They said for the 10th anniversary.
Roast me, but do a fundraiser for ForgottenHarvest.org.
Cool.
And that would be wonderful. You can go on our site, donate a few bucks, and for every buck you donate, six people get fed tomorrow. But Peter sent me that note from Mark in Canada about doing a roast, which I think would be fun. I'd help put it on, by the way, of Peter for his 10th
year. Twitter roast?
Yeah, we could do that, too.
That'd be
Has
fun.
There not been a Twitter roast?
I don't know.
No. No, Tommy, just coined something.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Twitter roast.
Yeah.
That sounds... I'm not going to go there. Okay. Over and out.
Over and out.
Go Wings.
Go Wings.
Visit our website, autolinedetroit.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern, get your daily automotive news fix with Autoline Daily, and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline Detroit. That's all there, and much more, at autolinedetroit.tv. Orange, purple, silver, and blue, changes.